This is KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. The opinions and views expressed in this program do not reflect those of KUCI, its management, or the UC Board of Regents. You can access shows live or as podcasts by going online to kuci.org. This is the In the Garden show, produced by UC Master Gardeners of Orange County. I am Ann Liu for the hour. This week's topic is backyard chickens. My guests are Terry Vargas and Lindsay Koob. Welcome to the show, girls.
Thank you, Ann.
Now I say girls because that's what they call their chickens. Tell me a little bit about your own girls in your own backyard and your experience that you're bringing to the show.
This is Lindsay, first of all, and I've been into chickens for about 6 years. We got into chickens after my mother, Terry, had been raised with chickens, I guess, and we are now out in the public teaching about them. They're really great pets to have.
That's exciting because the public out there can meet Lindsay and Terry if you go to Centennial Farms, correct?
Yes, we do go and volunteer at Centennial Farms.
And many other places, many of the other venues that UC Master Gardeners serve, right, Terry?
Yes, that's right. Yes, we volunteer at South Coast Rec. We also volunteer, as Lindsay said, at Centennial Farm.
And you used to do the Great Park. Are the chickens still there?
I believe the chickens are still there, but we did volunteer a couple times there.
I see. Yes. So both Terry and Lindsay are big volunteers, and these are the go-to girls for any questions about chickens. So I'm really excited to have them on the show for this week. Let's begin with some big questions. Backyard chickens. Why is it good to have them? Why raise chickens?
Well, chickens are great for our gardens, and that's why we as Master Gardeners are excited about them, because they offer us so many benefits. For example, they're great at weed management. They love to eat weeds and other little seeds and things that you may not be wanting to be growing in your garden. They also are great at pest management, although I must tell you, Anne, that they're not good at identifying the beneficials from the pests, so you need to help them out in that area.
You got to be careful. The ones we don't want them to eat, we kind of have to fence them out?
Yes, we need to give them a little help in that area.
So, like, that's why we have chicken fencing?
To protect not only the beneficials, but also the plants that you don't want them getting into. Because if you let them go on their own, unsupervised, unmanaged, they will wreak havoc in your garden. So we want to make sure that we do manage them while they're exploring in the garden looking for those pests.
I thought of borrowing chickens for my own garden to help get rid of the snails and slugs. Do you think that's a good idea?
I think it's an excellent idea. They are very good at eating slugs and snails.
We've often joked that we could rent out our chickens so people can get their gardens ready to plant in.
Have you really done that?
Oh, no. We've just talked about it.
Not yet. We joked
about it.
I think that's an excellent idea. Maybe you could provide some service for that. That would be great.
In the future, yes.
They make great fertilizer, correct?
Yes, they do. Their manure is very high in nitrogen. However, you want to make sure to put the manure into your composter before you put it into your garden, because it actually could cause a lot of damage to your plants, and that's counterproductive to what you want.
Are you saying we need to age the manure?
Yes, you need. It's too strong to apply to the plants. It would damage them. So you want to put it in your composter, and then it would make good for organic matter and also great for water retention in the garden.
So what if one does not have a composter, but they have chickens and they want to use the manure for fertilizer? What can they do?
Well, I would recommend to come to one of the Master Gardeners compost classes, and they can learn how to compost, and that way they can start that, because they really go hand in hand, chickens and composting.
Oh, good idea. good idea. We can check on the UCCEMG website, and that will show special events, and there are composting classes given throughout the year in different locations. I know there is one that is being given in the next few weeks down in San Juan Capistrano at the Rialta Park and Event Center. So keep an eye out for our event calendar on uccemg.com. So let's go back to how chickens are wonderful, easy, inexpensive pets. How many do you have?
We were just counting them the other day. we have about 20.
Oh, my heavens.
Yes.
That's a lot.
It is a lot, but we live on a quarter of an acre, so there's plenty of room there for them, and they're happy and productive. So.
Wow. Are they all chickens?
Well, chickens, the question in your mind is really, are they all hens? Because chickens can be a hen or a rooster, and roosters are not allowed in that vicinity. They're usually not allowed in urban settings, so there are restrictions in the city ordinances for that.
Thanks for the clarification. I've always wondered whether a rooster was a chicken, and now you've clarified it. The truth is, a rooster is a chicken, right?
Yes.
So some cities don't allow roosters, are you saying?
Some cities do not allow roosters, and some cities do not allow chickens in general, whether it's a rooster or a hen.
So that gets into Lindsay's area. She's going to talk a little bit about finding out about chicken laws and ordinances.
Yes, that's correct. Now, most of the cities in Orange County, they do actually allow chickens. There are a select few, like Laguna Beach, Laguna Woods, Fountain Valley. They don't allow chickens. However, there are most of them, like we said, do allow chickens. If you ever want to know if your city does allow them, we have a couple websites you can go ahead and look on. You can either, first of all, look on the city ordinances website for your particular city or contact the code enforcement, or you can go on findlaw.com or municode.com, and either one of those will tell you. You can look up by the city and see what the restrictions are. Some of them do allow chickens, but you have to be a certain feet from your neighbor, or you have to have the coop certain distance. It really just depends on the city. So we always recommend just checking with your city ordinance to be safe.
And do they name the number of chickens that are allowed?
Yes, they name the number, and some cities, like I know Costa Mesa and Huntington Beach, you have to have a special permit to have them too. And sometimes there is a small fee to get that permit, but it's worth it in the end.
And why do you think it's worth it, Lindsay?
Oh, they're such fun to watch. I mean, we always joke that if you have cable, you can cancel your cable bill right then and there, because you want drama, they give you drama. A little sports action. If they see a bug, like those little flying green beetles, they will jump in the air, catch them mid-flight, and chase each other around to eat them, and it's just so much fun to watch them.
Something tells me you're very fond of watching your chickens. I bet you give each of them names.
Yes, they each have their own names, and they each have their own personalities.
And I guess I want to know which one's your favorite.
That's an easy one. Well, I love all my chickens. My favorite, I would say, is Carol Petunia.
What a cute name. And what makes her so special?
Well, she has a beard. She is the bearded lady, and she growls, which I know it sounds funny, but she'll walk around kind of making this little growly noise, and you think she's mean, but she's really very sweet.
20 chickens. And what city do you live in?
We live in the city of Fullerton.
Fullerton has no limit on the number of chickens?
That's correct. Fullerton has no limit. We just have to have their coop 30 feet from our neighbor's dwelling.
We'll talk about coops in a little bit. Let's talk a little bit more about your neighbors. How do your neighbors feel about chickens being next door?
They actually don't mind it at all. They actually really enjoy it. We actually have a couple neighbors that have chickens. A couple houses down, they actually have some chickens, and it's kind of neat to hear them every once in a while, and know that they're not our chickens making a little bit of noise and clucking sounds.
Wow. And your chickens don't make too much noise. You never get complaints?
We never get complaints, although we do like to tell people there is a fine print about getting chickens. They can be loud when they want or need something. So if they don't have food, they don't have water, they're going to let you know it. But we like to tell people that they're no louder than a barking dog, no more annoying than that. The loudest I would say they get is when they lay an egg. They kind of like to announce it, and they're quite proud of when they lay eggs. So.
Now, I have from a magazine that a chicken might lay 259 eggs in a year. Can that possibly be true?
Yes, and there are hundreds of different breeds of chickens out there, and some lay, you know, the brown-colored eggs you see in the market, some lay white eggs, some even lay green eggs, and the dark chocolate-colored brown eggs. So there is a wide variety of colors that we, you know, most people don't even see or know about, so it's really neat.
And there's also a breed that lays even more than that. They will lay 300-plus eggs a year.
That's a lot of eggs. With 20 chickens, who's doing all the eating?
Neighbors, we are. We even give it to our cats.
So really?
They benefit from the nutrition from the eggs as well.
Well, now that you've mentioned cats, how do the cats feel about the chickens? Do they get along?
They do. Some of them are. We actually have four cats. Three of them are afraid of the chickens, and one is just captivated by the chickens. She loves to watch them. Yeah, not to hurt them, but she is intrigued by their personalities and how they're constantly moving. Chickens spend a lot of their time scratching. It's called scratching. They're digging in the ground for food, either seeds, bugs. They're looking, foraging, if you will.
I see. So chicks can get along well with cats and other kinds of pets? How about dogs?
They can, but you need to be careful with cats that tend to be aggressive, or feral cats. Also with dogs that are like hunting, retriever type dogs. You need to watch very carefully.
Have you had any problems with a dog or a cat attacking your chickens?
When I was a young girl, I grew up and I had some pet chickens, and I had two German shepherds that were the sweetest, sweetest things. We could pull on their ears or tails. We could do anything to them and they wouldn't hurt anybody. And one morning we found that one of the dogs got the one of our hens, and so they were in big trouble. But it was a lesson learned that we needed to keep them in the, we needed to build a coop for them. They were actually free ranged at the time. And so we put them in a coop at that point for their protection.
This gets into how we care for baby chicks in the first 60 days. Are there special rules to follow, special attention for those very young chicks?
Yes. When a chick hatches from its egg, you immediately place it into what's called a brooder. And it's a space that is kept warm, about a 95 degrees temperature Fahrenheit, and it has non-slippery surface, food, water, and protection from predators. You decrease that temperature about 5 degrees each week until you get to about room temperature, which is about 70 degrees. And then you can put it into an outside coop, but they need to be still protected. So they definitely need more care and more protein in their feed than, let's say, a pullet, which is like a teenage female chicken or a hen.
I see. And then finally, after 60 days, are they pretty adult?
They're not adult, but they are no longer considered a chick. Then they start to go into the stage where they are starting to be considered as pullets, if it's a female chicken. And a pullet is not a hen, so she's not a mature, but she's not a chick. She's best way for me to describe it is she's like a teenager. She's in that midpoint. And you can have a pullet that is either laying eggs or not.
I see.
And depending on the breed, she could start laying at about 20 weeks or so, give or take.
And how long into their lifespan do they lay eggs?
It depends on the breed. It depends on whether the hen is also a heritage bird. Heritage birds tend to lay longer than a hybrid type bird, one that is not a heritage bird. And also, there are other factors that influence how long they lay. The management, their feed, what they're eating. You know, there's many things that are involved in it.
This sounds very complicated.
It can be.
It sounds like if someone out there were to begin taking care of chickens, they better have somebody who could be a mentor. Do you recommend that?
I do recommend it. As a matter of fact, one of the local feed stores, we were speaking to one of the ladies there that runs the store, and she was sharing with us that she has had a couple of people come into the store and very excited about starting the chickens, did a lot of research, and then they found that it just wasn't for them, so they had to rehome the chickens. So it's not for everybody, so it's really important to make sure that you check it out as thoroughly as possible. We give classes through the Master Gardeners, and so that's one way of finding out about them. We also have a link through our Master Gardener website that people can learn more about chickens. And so it's important that they do some thorough research before they get involved in that and talk to neighbors that have them and other people that do so, because it is a long-term commitment.
Yeah, that sounds like good information to know. Anyone can go on uccemg.com and look at the different links there, and there is important information about chickens. Now, chickens can get pretty old. Do you eat your old chickens?
No. We don't eat any of our chickens,
no.
Young or old.
They are our pets. We always say, would you eat your dog or cat? We would never eat our chickens.
Never. So you must have some old ladies.
We do have some, yeah.
We do.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, when I was a kid, I had mentioned that I had chickens, and I had a chicken that she grew to like 15 years old,
wow.
And she actually laid on her last day of her life. So
wow.
They do tend to slow down in their egg production, but they can lay for a long time.
That's amazing.
And once again, that is dependent on their care, you know, the management, what their feed is, you know, if they get any diseases or so forth, of course that's going to affect their lay.
Okay, I want to get into the feed, but before we do, you mentioned something about the non-slip flooring. What do you use for non-slip flooring?
Something as simple as a paper towel underneath. The chicks are so vulnerable. If they were on a slippery surface, they could get what's called splayed legs, which is they slip and their legs split apart like this. And then, I mean, there's a way to remedy it, but it's very painful for the chick, and it's unnecessary if you take the precautions.
Now, listeners out there cannot see Terry's imitation of splayed leg chickens, so I will need to just describe that her arms went out like an open V to be a splayed chicken, and so that would be very, very painful.
Yes, it is very painful for them, and so, you know, you want to take precautionary measures so that that doesn't happen. Pay attention to the way the chicks are behaving in the brooder. For example, if you see the chicks all huddled together in a corner, for example, that tells you that the chicks are cold.
Ah.
And so you want to immediately take action to increase the heat and make sure that the chicks are getting enough heat. Otherwise, they could actually die. They're very sensitive to the temperature.
This is heat from a heating lamp, right?
Yes, from a heating lamp.
This is not an incubator.
No.
This is a brooding.
You only use the incubator to provide heat and humidity for the egg. That's what they need for to hatch.
To hatch.
Mm-hmm. Well, to grow and then hatch.
Now, your eggs. How many of your eggs do you eat, and how many do you save to hatch into new chicks?
Okay, what an excellent question. We don't have a rooster, and in order for you to have a fertile egg, you need a rooster.
Birds and bees.
Okay. Yes, and see, and that's the wonderful thing about being able to have a hen. A hen does not need a rooster to lay an egg. You only need the rooster if you want to have chicks.
I should have known that one. Oops.
But the thing is, a lot of people don't realize that. They think you have to have the rooster in order for a hen to lay eggs.
It would seem to make sense, huh?
Mm-hmm.
If you did want to breed some of your favorite chicks, do you rent a rooster? How do you get a rooster? From the feed store, they have a loaner rooster?
There are places that you can get fertile eggs from. For example, you could get it from a breeder. You can get fertile eggs. You can actually get fertile eggs from a lab. They provide them also. There are many different sources. You need to be very diligent about where you get your eggs before you go ahead and take that route. The other thing, too, is if you are going to hatch fertile eggs, you want to make sure that you know what you're going to do with the chicks that hatch, because you may end up with some ruse. You know, your intention is, well, look at all of these, your potential hens, but you may end up with all
surprise.
Ruse. Surprise.
Yes.
Yes.
You have no control.
No.
Right?
No. And then what are you going to do with all those?
I don't know. Apply for a lot of ordinances.
And as Lindsay had mentioned, a lot of the cities in Orange County do allow for chickens to be as part of people's backyards, but none of them allow roosters.
None of them.
For the obvious reason, and that is because of the crowing. However, hens are physically capable of crowing. We actually had one that crowed.
Really?
Every morning.
And didn't you say you had one that barked like a dog?
Well, she growls.
She growls.
Before we get into eggs, can you tell me anything I might have missed about asking about chicks?
There's actually a lot more we can talk about chicks, but one thing I wanted to talk about, I guess, is that other benefits that we get from chickens in our backyards. And that is that they create a sense of community. And I think that's so important, that they create a sense of community for families. You know, kids that get involved in 4-H, which is also part of the cooperative extension, they learn about economics, responsibility, and many other things. And when the family works together with the kids in the 4-H program with their chickens, that brings a sense of unity and, you know, a sense of community. Also, within the community, it brings neighbors together. It's brought us together to talk about this. You know,
yes.
There's so many ways that it creates a sense of community, which I think is so valuable.
That's wonderful. When I think of 4-H, I think of sheep or pigs or horses, but having chickens be the livestock to care for, that's kind of fun.
Yes.
It's not as intimidating.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else?
And they also help to prepare, for those of us that are gardeners and that is our passion, they help us to prepare the garden for the new crop. For example, when we want to plant in an area, we will put some of our girls into that space, and our girls will, like I mentioned, they do most of their day is spent scratching. They're looking for seeds and vegetation, and bugs, and so they will scratch that area up. So we don't have to, let's say, for example, that area is compacted, the soil is, they will till the earth, so to speak, for us.
Oh, that sounds
and
wonderful.
So they save us a lot of work.
Especially in this area where the soil is so much clay,
mm-hmm.
It would be nice to have some chickens naturally break down the soil. It helps to aerate it. Soil needs to have air in it. Mm-hmm. Allows water to go into the soil so nutrients can flow down. So that's a great idea.
And they'll even fertilize it.
And fertilize the area
at the same time. And they have fun while they're doing it, too.
And you have fun watching them.
Exactly.
That sounds like a win-win situation. I imagine you love watching your birds because they're so colorful.
Yes.
There are so many breeds.
There are. There are so many, and it's so neat to see the different variety, too. Even in the actual breeds, we have a few Americanas, which are the ones that lay the green eggs. There we have some that have, you know, the black and white plumage as far as that, or like the brown and kind of like a reddish color to them. So it's really neat to see in the variety just within the breeds, too.
And you get a lot of help in checking out the different breeds that are available at the feed store? Or what's your best source to explore options?
Ah. There is a book. It's called The Standard of Perfection. It's put out by the American Poultry Association. This association has been around since 1800-something. They've been around for a long time, and they set the standards for the breeds. They decide which breeds are accepted, which ones not, and they identify what temperament, the colors, the characteristics of the breed, and so we go to that source.
Percentage. What percentage of chickens are purebred? Most of them, or some of them?
There are hundreds of breeds of chickens,
mm-hmm.
but not all the breeds are set to that standard. And some of those breeds that are within that standard are actually what are considered on the critical list. So there are some that are needing our attention, if you will, so that we can have that genetic diversity.
Critical meaning endangered?
Yes, endangered. And if someone is interested in knowing that which breeds are on that critical list, the Livestock Conservancy they have a list of the ones that are on the critical list or endangered. They have a list of the ones that have are recovering, that are on the watch list, and that are endangered.
That's really interesting. I'd like to come back to ask about some of our native chickens in North America. But before we do that, I want to take a station break to let our listeners out there know that they are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine and KUCI.org online. This is the In the Garden show produced by the UC Master Gardeners. I am Ann Liu, your Master Gardener DJ for the hour. For more home garden information, go online to uccemg.com. You can find out more about weeds, pests, ornamental plants, and edibles with photos to help you identify them. uccemg.com gives you month-by-month gardening tips and information about soils, fertilizers, and composts. This website also lists events where Master Gardeners are presenting garden workshops based on the latest scientific research done by the University of California Cooperative Extension. Also, you can find information about publications by ANR, Agriculture and Natural Resources. Some of these are free as well as available in Spanish. Do you have a particular question about your garden? Are you interested in being a master gardener? Are you looking for a speaker for your group? You can go on this website to find answers to your garden questions on our hotline and to access podcasts of our past In the Garden shows. That's hotline at uccemg.com. This week's topic is backyard chickens, and my guests are Terry Vargas and Lindsay Koob. Welcome back to our show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Now, we just left off talking about different breeds of chickens, and I'm just kind of curious. I'm a history buff and would like to know, what are some native chickens in North America that might be found in this area?
The native breeds to North America tend to be what's considered a dual-purpose bird. On a very basic level, chickens are identified as layers or meat. And it gets even more complicated than this, but on a very basic level, layers or meat, meaning for eggs or for consumption of the bird. Now, when you have the overlap, eggs and meat consumption, then they're considered dual purpose. And the ones from North America are usually considered dual purpose birds. And so some of those birds, to list just a few, would be the Plymouth Rock. It could be a barred rock, it could be a white rock. As Lindsay had mentioned, they come in different varieties, feathers, patterns. So the Plymouth Rock would be one. The Buckeye would be another.
I see. So the natives are dual purpose.
Usually dual purpose, yes.
They can lay eggs as well as provide us meat.
Yeah, for those that eat meat, yes.
you are vegans.
Vegetarians.
Vegetarians eat eggs.
Yes, vegetarians do eat eggs. It's the vegans who don't eat any animal products whatsoever.
So let's get into eggs. Let's talk about how we can tell the difference between organic eggs and the conventional eggs sold in stores.
You can't tell by just looking at an egg if it's organic or not on the outside. And actually, not even by looking on the inside, Anne. You would need to be told what that egg, whether it's organic or not, organically fed or not. As Lindsay mentioned earlier, the shell of the egg is dependent upon the breed. So you can have a green egg, a cream-colored egg, a chocolate egg, or white egg. It doesn't matter. The nutritional value of the egg is dependent on what the hen eats.
I see. So what do chickens eat? You mentioned the different kinds of feed. And I guess the conventional eggs are from birds that eat a mash of corn and soybeans, much of which is genetically engineered. Is that right?
There are some birds that do eat genetically engineered food, and there's the debate is still out there whether that's the best way to feed or not to feed. And that's a personal choice, since even the scientists are still debating over that.
What kinds of feed do you choose to feed your birds? I figure they must be the best kind of feed.
We actually make our own blend of feed for our girls. When you buy commercial feed, which is usually what the commercial breeders will feed their birds, and a lot of the people that have their chickens in the backyard actually buy the commercial feed already done. There aren't many people that put their own feed together. But basically, it's very important that your chickens get a well-balanced nutritional meal. They need, just like us, we need protein, we need certain vitamins, minerals. So do the chickens. They need calcium for their bones. A lot of times when you get an egg and the shell, for example, is weak, that tells you that your hens need calcium. So there are ways to tell what the hen needs. The other thing, too, is that hens have an intuitive ability, if you will, to tell what it is that their body needs. So, for example, if they're needing a certain nutrient, they will automatically go for that whatever it is that's going to give them that nutrient that they're missing. They're not able to do it with minerals, but they can do it with vitamins and so forth.
I see. Do you include flaxseed?
Flaxseed, we also give them chia. We give them various grains, greens, which is when they eat greens, that gives them that dark orangey, almost red color yolk that some people may see. It comes from xanthophyll. That's what's contained in those, in the greens, the carotenoids. So that's what gives that color to the yolk.
So you can't always tell just by looking at the egg whether it's an organic egg, but I sure can taste the difference.
There is a big difference, we think anyway, and I don't, maybe it's pride of ownership. I don't know if there's a, but there is a difference to it. And the other thing too is that we know what our girls are eating. When you have your chickens in your own yard, you know how they're being treated and you know what they're eating.
Eggs can vary quite a bit.
They can.
Almost like little Easter eggs, right? They can vary by size as well. What are the largest eggs you have?
The largest egg that we had was by one of our Americanas, and she laid an egg. It was at least 3 inches long by about 3 inches wide. It was a huge egg.
Wow.
And it had 3 yolks in it.
That is really big.
So she laid a couple of those eggs.
And 3 yolks. How do you account for multiple yolks?
She was a pullet at the time that she laid that egg. And during that time, her reproductive system was just starting out. And so sometimes that happens. A follicle, 2, maybe 3, maybe more, will be released into the infundibulum, which is where the egg starts passing through into the oviduct. And so sometimes that happens, but it's usually with young birds.
Ah, that can explain. Once in a rare time, I buy store eggs, and when I crack it, the eggs might have multi-yolks.
Yes, mm-hmm. And that's exactly what happens.
Ah, that explains it. How old are those eggs sold in the stores?
If you look at a carton of eggs, there's a stamp of numbers on there. One number refers to the location where those eggs were packed. The other number is the Julia number. It's the date that those eggs were packed, not the date that the eggs were laid, the date that those eggs were packed. And then there's also another part of that stamp that may be included that will say the expiration date or sell-by date. So that's how you can tell when you buy from the store. That's required to have that on there.
I see. And do eggs have to be refrigerated as soon as possible? And how long can they sit in the refrigerator safely?
All right. There also is a debate. Do you refrigerate them or do you not? The reason for refrigeration is to keep the eggs as cool as possible. About 40 degrees Fahrenheit is ideal. You do not have to refrigerate the eggs, but if you do, you want to make sure that you don't put them in the door, because if you put them in the door, they're being
rattled around.
And when you look at an egg, there are some cord-like strands on the sides of the, when you're looking at the egg, the albumen, which is the white part of the egg, those cord-like strands are holding the yolk in the center of that albumen. If it gets bounced around, which it would if it's in the door of the refrigerator, that will affect how that chalice is holding that egg and the yolk in the center. The other thing, too, is that if it's in the door, it's also being exposed to multiple temperatures when you're opening it. So you want to put it in an area where it's not, where it's going to have a consistent temp.
That's interesting. If you were to shop for a refrigerator, so many refrigerators have their doors with egg slots
right
in the door.
Yes.
Right? And so they better talk to some chicken people.
Yeah. Yes. The other thing, too, you want to take into consideration, when you bring the eggs home from the market, they've been refrigerated. You're bringing them home. You want to get them into the refrigerator as quickly as possible, because what you don't want happening is for the eggs to sweat.
Ah, I've seen eggs sweat.
Yes. And when that sweating occurs, it is exposing the eggs to potential bacteria. What happens in the commercial industry is that they wash the eggs and then they seal. The shell of the egg has thousands and thousands of pores on it, and there's a food grade mineral oil that they place on the shell, and that seals the thousands of pores so that it protects the egg from any type of pathogens going in there. When a hen lays an egg, she deposits something that's called a cuticle. It is a protein substance that seals it. It does it naturally. And so if you have eggs at home from your chickens, you don't have to wash them. But it's very important that you maintain their area clean and that you keep their nesting box clean. It's much easier to keep eggs clean than it is to clean dirty eggs. So you want to make sure that you do that. And the other thing, too, is warmth, so heat, tends to age the eggs. When the egg is when the egg is laid, it contains carbon dioxide in there. As the egg ages, the carbon dioxide escapes, and you have a gas exchange. Oxygen comes in, and then the albumen, which is the white, starts to thin out. That's when you start to see the eggs where the albumen is thin. A freshly laid egg from a healthy hen will have a thick albumen and the heft. It's got that raised yolk, it's nice and tight. And if you have a diseased hen, so it could be a freshly laid egg, but if her immune system is compromised, then she could lay an egg that where the albumen is not as thick. It can be runny. Also, vanadium can also, sometimes there was a vanadium found in the feed, and that caused that runny type of albumen too. So there are many factors that can affect the quality of the egg.
Let's talk a little bit about salmonella. Salmonella transmitted through eggs. Can you tell the listeners out there what is the problem with salmonella and how to prevent it?
The problem is that it can make you very sick, especially for people that have immune systems that have not developed, for example, kids that are more susceptible to that, as well as the elderly whose immune systems are maybe compromised, and also people that have a compromised immune system. That's why it's very important to maintain the area where your girls are laying their eggs, that their nesting boxes are clean, that you're checking them constantly, that they're clean. And if you have a dirty egg, well, if it's really dirty, you don't want to even have it. If it is, you know, slightly dirty, you can get a little bit of sandpaper and just rub it off. And you want to make sure that that egg is cooked really well. You want to make sure it's cooked really well, because if it has anything in there, it will completely destroy it.
I see.
So that is the prevention.
And even washing hands after touching them?
Yes. And for those that do wash their eggs, they want to be aware that some people will go out and collect their eggs and then go to the sink and wash the eggs right away and then put them in. You want to be aware that there is a temperature differential. When you open that faucet to wash your eggs, the faucet water is generally cold when you open it. The eggs are warm. You could actually be sucking in bacteria. You could be sucking in pathogens into that egg. You want to make sure that you're taking that into consideration.
So the best way to wash the egg would be?
If you're going to, just be aware of that temperature differential. You don't want to...
Pretty much the egg can't be warm still, just from the hen when you go to pick it up. And there's been times we've gone, you know, to collect eggs, and the egg is actually warm because it's just come out of the hen, so it's that fresh. So you just don't want to take that warm egg and put it under cold water. And also, too, once you've washed that egg under the water, you do have to put it in the fridge at that point, because you've washed off that protective coating, that bloom, if you will, and it'll be susceptible to having things go inside of it. So that's when you have to refrigerate it. And also, just to clarify too, once you've purchased eggs from the store and they've been refrigerated, once an egg has been refrigerated, whether it be you purchased it from the store or you washed your eggs and put it in the refrigerator, it has to stay in the refrigerator at that point. It can't be refrigerated and then brought out and not used. You have to keep that egg refrigerated or it's not going to be good. You might
good
get sick.
Good points. Good points. All right. We have... been talking about chickens for almost an hour, and we have a few minutes left. If you'd like to add anything that I haven't asked about, we have about 5 minutes left for you to add anything you wish.
I guess we can chickens. Give a little bit of egg information, if you will, because I know that's mostly what people want the chickens
yes.
for, is the egg nutrition. One large egg can contain about 5 grams of fat in it, and it's the good fat, it's not the bad fat. So people are always concerned about, oh, I have to watch the fat in my diet. Well, this is good fat, so eat the eggs. There's about 70 calories in there, and one large egg can provide 6 grams of high quality protein. It's really, really good for you.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, nutritionists say that is the perfect food right there, the egg. One complete egg has it all in there. So when they're comparing protein, they're comparing it to that egg.
Also, too, people will most of the time will have an egg white omelet, and they'll take the yolk out. The yolk has most of the protein in it. So to throw away that yolk is like throwing away something super valuable. You want to eat that. And I know people will talk about the cholesterol and stuff, but it's like the good fat, it's a good cholesterol. So it's really important to have in your diet.
That yolk serves as the food for a chick embryo when it's growing.
That's right. It's the first food.
Yes.
Right, for the embryo.
So also the eggs, they have, you know, iron in it, vitamin A, D, E, vitamin B12, folate, selenium, I mean... It's just a magical little thing.
Iron.
It's great. Iron, yeah. Mm.
So. That's good stuff. When we have nothing else to cook for lunch or a meal, we just fry an egg, put it on a piece of toast, and have a very nutritious meal.
Yes.
Yes. And it's not that high in calories.
No, it really isn't.
Great ideas. Well, I really want to thank you both for coming in to share your expertise on chickens. This was very interesting to me because I've never raised chickens except for when I was a little girl. I'm Chinese American, and my parents brought home chickens, and we raised them, we fed them, and then one day they were gone. And You know what we had for dinner that night?
Mm. Oh, no.
So we didn't treat them as pets, even though my brothers and sisters named them. My parents just had them taken off to the butcher, and we would have this wonderful, fresh poultry for dinner that night. And even that, fresh poultry is very delicious meat. You wouldn't know because you don't eat your pets, but...
No, we don't.
We don't. We like to hug them, not eat them.
So you do hug your chickens.
We do hug your chickens. Just wash your hands after handling them.
Okay. Yes. This was a wonderful show. Thank you very much for coming in. And for our listeners out there, I want you to know that this show will be a ready-made podcast for you. If you go on KUCI.org and go down the to the schedule and find our Thursday show in the garden and click on it, you will be connected to our website, uccemg.com, and you will see a list of past podcasts. We have been doing this now for like 2.5 years, and we have a wonderful vault of past shows that are still very, very relevant for every season. Soil, places to visit during the summer, month to month in the garden. They're all wonderful podcasts that you can listen at your convenience. So listeners out there, stay tuned for our next show, Callie at Home Plate, and listen again next Thursday when we do another show in the garden. This is Ann Liu, your host for the hour. And thank you again, Terry and Lindsay.
Thank you, Ann. Thank you for having us.